from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. You're hearing Fire on the Mountain by the Grateful Dead, performed by the Mickey Hart Band live. And with this band, Mickey Hart has a new album out, former Grateful Dead drummer, and he collaborated with scientists in this new album from NASA and Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, converting light waves from outer space into music. We'll talk with him about his varied career, and we'll discuss his efforts to tap into the rhythm and vibrations of the universe. His new album with the Mickey Hart Band is called Mysterium Tremendum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. That's a Cut the Deck. That's, in fact, the name of what you're hearing here. It's actually from a new album from the Mickey Hart Band called Mysterium Tremendum. And Mickey Hart's going to be with us this hour, three-time Grammy Award-winning drummer. He spent three decades, of course, as a member of the Grateful Dead and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame back in 1994, given, along with other members of the Grateful Dead, a Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award in 2007. He's written many scores, I would almost say scores of scores, and soundtracks, and authored a number of books, a couple of which we have talked about with him on Forum, Drumming at the Edge of Magic, Planet Drum, Spirit into Sound, and Songcatchers, and now heads up the Mickey Hart Band, which released this new album. It's an April release. Music based on the conversion of light waves from space, Mysterium Tremendum. The band, by the way, will be appearing June 30th at the Fillmore, and Mickey Hart is with us here for this Forum Hour. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I like these new sounds.
These are not new sounds. These are probably the oldest sounds in the universe.
Well, that's true. They go back to the Big Bang and all that, I realize. We were saying before we went on the air, we're both admirers of Pythagoras, and Mickey said if he could have anybody at a party, it would be Pythagoras and would invite me and maybe some of you as well. But let's talk about the inspiration of this new album, because it's fascinating that you give it that title, but right out of... For those who know their theology, Rudolf Otto and Meister Eckhart, we're talking about something numinous, something that can't be understood in a rational way. It has to do with maybe even the divine, but perhaps even transcendence.
Yes, that's exactly right. Well said, Michael. It's all about the awe, the, you know, when you meet the spiritual, the sort of sacred dimension or something completely other, you know, from reality. And that would be the Mysterium Tremendum.
Well, but this was done with NASA. This was done with light waves turning into sound waves. I mean, it's all very scientific.
When I wrote the books back in 91, you mentioned Drumming at the Edge, we didn't know when the beginning of the creation of the universe was. We thought it was between 10 and 20 billion years. Well, George Smoot from Berkeley, Dr. Smoot, who won the Nobel in 2006, he pinned the tail on the donkey at 13.7 billion. Back then in 91... you couldn't find instruments to really measure it. The background cosmic radiation, we didn't know what it was. So the thought of going back to the beginning of the story, where the beat began, where the rhythm began, where the universe began, where some creational force put his foot down and made it beat one or whatever, was too sexy and irresistible for a rhythmist to not investigate. So,
it might have been before the Big Bang. We had some NASA folks on just last week. We were talking about the fact that Stephen Hawking thinks maybe gravity preceded the Big Bang.
We don't know what happened from nothing. I mean, that's really a good point. That's part of the mysterium. What happened before that moment, you know, there's speculation. It's just speculation now. But people are starting to think about it. Even the Vatican, I might add, who has a cosmology department now. So... Everybody's trying to come to grips with the science of where it all began. It flies in the face of a lot of things, but everybody's scuffling now to come to grips with the idea that there was an arrhythmic event, some percussive arrhythmic event 13.7 billion years ago.
Trying to get back to that original beat, really. That's what it's all about.
Well, we're not back exactly. We're 400,000 years this side of the Big Bang. The cosmic background radiation, Smoot's readings, read the echo of the Big Bang. But from that, you can extrapolate exactly where and when it happened. It happened everywhere. No one knows where. It just happened everywhere.
It was ubiquitous. But you can get these sounds. That's the important thing. You can get these vibrations rhythms.
Everything up there that vibrates has a light component, a visual component, and a sonic component. If you can measure that waveform, which we can now. The light wave, the radiation, light waveform, and change it using algorithms into sound. I get it, put it in the computer, and make music with it, dance with the infinite universe.
What kind of dance do you do, Mickey? That's what I'm
Well, I do the same. I'm part of the Earth. You know, the whole earth music. That's what I play. Music of the whole earth. That's what I play.
You can't tell the dancer from the dance. That's what it's all about.
Yes. It's something that has to do primarily with who I am. You know,
your breathing.
My breathing, my heartbeat, and who I am as a person, my rhythmic DNA. Everybody has their own DNA, musical rhythmic DNA.
And dark stars figure in this as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I mean, it's a whole sense of
this
universe that we know, but then there are all those other universes that we don't know.
It's entraining with all of that. That was the Grateful Dead all about. We were trying to entrain with the air, with the matter, you know, with things that were all around us. Some of it we couldn't hear or see, but we know that dark matter. We know all of the photons, all the neutrinos, all those things are passing through us, over us, every place. How to turn that into a musical identity, a sound mark. Always fascinated me, you know, and so this is kind of like a serious science in serious art, you know, or not so serious art, you know. I mean, I'm just trying to be in the moment and interpret what all of this really means to me, and I don't really know what it means except that it's meaningful. It makes me want to go after it and find out what it is. And every star, every planet sings its own tune. I'd like to hear what the universe really sounds like. So this project was meant to do that.
Well, it's a logical extension in some ways. You know, it's been probably a quarter of a century since I interviewed Jerry Garcia, but he was even then talking about transcendent music. I mean, that's what the Grateful Dead, as you said, like to think you were doing and like to think that people were listening to. And by the way, you missed the Dead, so to speak?
Of course. Of course I missed Dead. Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you? Do you?
Well, all your fans do, and I'm sure you. But you've gone on to a real different identity here with your new band. And,
yeah.
It's a new universe, isn't it?
I'm a work in progress, you know, and I keep moving. And I keep, you know, trying to find the perfect wave and the perfect groove.
You're like a surfer, right? Looking for
circumnavigator, surfer. Yeah, I'm a sound surfer, sure.
And you got Zakir Hussain on one of these tracks. You got some real collaboration going on here.
Oh, yeah. Zakir and I have been together since we were kids, and he's been pretty much with me all for the whole ride.
Talk about who else is with you on this new ride.
Well, there's this drummer, Inks Herman from South Africa, plays with Vusi. He's amazing. Dave Schools from Widespread Panic on bass. Gowan Matthews on guitar. Sikiru Adipojo, my long-time talking drummer, best buddy. He's from Nigeria, and he's with us. And Crystal Hall, Joe Bagali. It's really
great.
And Ben Jonas, yes. Ben plays the keyboards.
And who's your lyricist?
Robert Hunter.
Robert Hunter.
Oh, yeah. Right. I wouldn't go out without, you know, a mother load from Robert Hunter. I mean, we've been writing since, you know, the old days.
You work with so many kids. In fact, I really have to say something about the work you've done, going into cancer wards with children with that red nose of yours and doing some really remarkable things.
You mean Drumbohead?
Drumbohead, exactly.
Yeah, Drumbohead does that. Mickey Hart doesn't do that. But Drumbohead would...
Well, it's an alter ego of Mickey Hart.
Well, it's my creative schizophrenia, perhaps. I don't know.
But you use the drum in so many ways to really... Mm. Bring kids into understanding rhythms, mm-hmm. understanding basic rhythms. Now, you brought a drum in with you here today. Mm. Give us a little sense of what you provide in the way of instruction for children when you go into these places, for example.
Well, I really don't instruct when I go in. We become one, and we try to pulse together. I really don't talk too much. I put the red nose on, and all of a sudden I'm from the planet drum. You know, and I'm so happy to be here for my first day on this planet. I really love your planet. And I just try to create something other. And they just start to drum. They start to pulse. And as they start to pulse, their face lights up with hope. and the pains go away for a while anyway, and it reinvigorates them, and sometimes it reconnects them. In the case of dementia, you know, Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which I work for, with.
You were working also with Rebecca Moleon. Sister Victoria is part of our staff here with California Report over at the Bynum UCSF Children's Hospital. And these patients actually get to drumming and sort of escape from the pain in some ways, don't
they? Well, they entrain. You know, they get in sync with themselves. There's a focus. See, it's not about drums and drumming. It's about the rhythm. And it's about what the rhythm does neurologically, because that's what rhythm central is the brain. So how the rhythm affects the brain is that's the code. That's the medicine. That's the diagnostic. Then we watch what the effect is of it. So it's very anecdotal now. We don't have too much science on it, but that's the next frontier.
Well, in fact, you gave one of the concerts you did, you gave 100% of the profits to music therapy research. This is really big for you.
All this tickets sold on my website goes to local music therapy in that city. It's a very serious new frontier. Music is medicine. And these are kind of like the foot soldiers out there. So now science is weighing in on it with the new MRIs and the new science to be able to find out what part of the brain lights up during an auditory driving experience like music.
But you know, in some surgery, in some hospitals, they play music for that specific purpose because they do feel it has a healing power.
Yes, but
it depends on the music, too.
Yeah, but it's still anecdotal. You know, it's like
you don't have the hard research yet. Yeah.
Well, there is a little bit of it, but now the gates are starting to open up. We're finding out the vibratory world has a lot of remedies in it. We don't know. Very much like Tesla must have felt when he first started to distribute and deal with electricity. You know, what is this vibratory energy? Since we're made of vibrations, since the universe started from vibrations, we are embedded in a universe of vibrations. Wouldn't you think that rhythm vibrations have to do with almost all ailments or the ways of putting things together or breaking them up? When the rhythm goes bad, you go into ill health.
The Beach Boys sang about good vibrations and there are bad vibrations, that's all.
Yeah, well, that's a pop song talking about a serious subject. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are good vibrations. And when you are in good health and you're thinking well, you are experiencing good vibrations because that's the healing power. That's how the body loses stress and self-medicates.
By tuning.
Music is a tuning mechanism. It's not just to dance to and enjoy. There are powers in it that we're finding out now with, like I say, with dementia and so forth.
Yeah, we're working, I know, with Parkinson's. You've been doing some of that and Alzheimer's. It really is fascinating research. A lot of people think really woo-woo when they come upon this research. But there's, like you say, some data that supports it. And let me go back to actually talking about vibrations. We did a show on the 75th anniversary of the Golden Gate Bridge, which you see as a wind harp.
Yeah, that's true.
And you did original music for that whole celebration. Yeah. Again, it was kind of sonification, wasn't it?
That's exactly right. That's the word. When we take other objects, marks that you can't hear, like the bridge, you wouldn't be able to hear it with your ear. A lot of the Golden Gate Bridge sounds below our limited range of hearing and above our limited range of hearing. And bringing it into our range and making music of it, that was a great celebration listening to the bridge sing its signature song. I've heard it myself, maybe mystically, over the many years going back and forth from the shows in the city. But now I can actually really tap in and we can all hear what the bridge sounds like.
How about, you know, like me, now you're sort of wrestling with certain kind of hearing, not really disabilities, but, you know, you've got AIDS. And how does that affect taking in what you want to take in?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always have good people around me. People that I can trust in case there's a frequency that I can't hear, but I can hear really well at certain volumes. And I just adapt, you know, because your ear has, is a muscle just like anything, and it has memory. So, and I have, you know, I use my Meyer speakers, you know, the finest speakers, and I know them like the back of my hand and so forth. So I reach a level that I can hear perfectly
You think the loud music that you played all those years may have affected your hearing?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's what it did. It was, you know, it cleaned my slate many times. I remember Jerry and I standing in front of his amplifier once, and we used to chat, and he used to play it mute. He just had it on a standby switch. We stand there for hours, and he'd pick, and we just, you know, rave, and somebody put the flipped the switch off or on, and his guitar was all the way up, and we just looked at each other as it went off, It was like a whole new universe after that. So you had to adapt. And I can feel things. I'm very sensitive now to the sound waves that are hitting my body, not just my ears. That's just one organ.
Talking to Mickey Hart, famed percussionist for decades with a member of the Grateful Dead, now with the Mickey Hart Band, which will be actually playing June 30th at the Fillmore. Going back to the Fillmore, how does that feel?
That feels cool. Yeah. I like it. You know, it's not quite like the old Fillmore. You know, it doesn't smell the same. It doesn't look the same. But it's kind of a nice feeling going back to where we were birthed, as it were.
You've been also doing some activism on the political front recently. I wanted to touch on this with you, working for Jared Huffman, also for Nancy Pelosi, kind of a diehard Democrat.
I'm an environmental bend to all of this, and a health bend as well. And so these people are pushing that agenda, and I will support them as long as they do that. And I've known Nancy, you know, for 30 years. And Jared is an up-and-coming, and he's going to do some really good work in D.C. I mean, you have to make a difference. You have to work for change, or else it'll just change on its own. And if you don't remember Scoop Nisker?
If you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own.
If you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own.
That's the thing Scoop Nisker remains to this day most famous for. Mickey Hart, of course, is most famous for his drum playing and his music, and we're going to hear some more of it in the course of this hour. But let me open the phone lines. There are many of you who are, well, Grateful Dead fans, Mickey Hart fans, would like to talk about this. Some of the serious subjects that we've broached already about music is healing, about sort of the mysterious nature of music and its tie to, well, sources like the beginning of our own creation or the universe, as we're talking about. How do you respond to all that? And what kind of thoughts does it put into your cranium? You're free to join us now. In fact, our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. In fact, there are a number of ways to join the program. You can do so by phone, of course, at our toll-free number. And we do welcome your calls, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you have for Mickey Hart on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. Or you can go, of course, to our Facebook page. Let me talk with you a little bit about, though, because, you know, we've kind of danced around this subject in the past with you on the air here, but this whole idea of music as magic, is music is not only a basic elemental rhythm of humanity and of creation and of the universe and all these things we're talking about, but the magical nature of music, I mean, the totemic and powerful, mystical nature of music.
Well, absolutely. Going back to Pythagoras, I mean, he saw the universe or the planets and the stars is some heavenly clockwork and as a symphony unto itself, you know, and that's why he called it music of the spheres. Music is just a miniature of what's going on up there. I mean, that's what music really is. It's just a miniature of the universe at work. The universe is entrained. It beats in time. There's a rhythm to it. It pulses. It spins. It pulses. It throbs. It spins. It expands. It contracts. That's what physics say of the universe. When you talk to an astrophysicist or a physics guy, he'll describe the universe as giant like membranes expanding and contracting, very much like a drumhead. And there's lots of spheres up there and drums around. And I don't want to extrapolate too much, but it's about no beginning, no ending. Circles have
infinity.
Always been, yeah, infinity.
And the interesting thing about this is that I keep thinking about Nietzsche, who described music as pure form. And it is pure form. I mean, as opposed to any of the other arts, really.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's great airplay, too, I might add. You know, when the ear hears it, it likes it. It gives it pleasure. And that's the first thing for you to understand. Once something gives you pleasure, you're going to want it to go back for more. But we don't know what's there yet. We know we can dance to it. We know it celebrates life. We smile. We get through the night with it. And, you know, sometimes it'll explain something lyrically that we can't make sense of in real life, you know, sometimes like Hunter's words. The reason
talk
I love
about the lyrics with Mysterium Tremendum.
Well, you know, he talks about things perhaps that, you know, you can't understand, you know, that every star sings its own tune, and he puts things in ways that explain things that you can't explain in language until some seer says it or puts it in print, like Hunter would.
Did he do some brushing up on his physics for this lyrics of this?
I'm always brushing up.
No, I'm talking about Hunter now.
Oh, no, Hunter. No, he knows too much. See, Hunter knows everything.
He's a polymath, isn't he?
He is. Hunter knows. He knew exactly what the Mysterium Tremendum was when I mentioned it. He knew Otto. He knows. He's well read. So there's very little that Hunter doesn't know about. So that's one of the reasons I like working with him.
And just for Mickey Hart fans and fans of the Grateful Dead, the Smithsonian has actually Smithsonian record albums
putting folkways.
Out the Folkways. Yeah. That was a word. Thank you. I was searching for what 25 albums were putting. They're putting together.
Yeah, I gave them 25 of my field recordings over the years to add to their Folkways collection. It's very funny because the Folkways collection, when I was 6 years old, was the collection that turned me on to the music out there. I was listening to Pygmies. The Ituri Rainforest Pygmies at 6 years old.
It's come full circle.
And now I kind of, you know, oversee the digitization, you know, some of the process at the Smithsonian Folkways. I'm on the board. And so, yeah, that's kind of an interesting turn of events.
And when did you turn from Michael to Mickey?
I was in high school. Yeah. There was a guy before me who was called Mickey, who was having so much fun. And when he graduated, they started calling me Mickey. And Michael was, for me, too formal. Michael didn't have fun. He was a shy little kid. But Mickey, he could do anything, and the girls liked him. So I became the Mickey. And so they just laid it on me, and I took it and ran with it.
It's fun. I was Mike for a long time. I told you that. Mm. And then suddenly I started thinking, maybe I need to be Michael, you know. That has more seriousness to it. Well, at the time it felt right, but, you know, when...
How long ago was that?
There are people... I started to become Michael when I was in graduate school, uh-huh. You know, my 20s, and it just stuck.
Hmm.
But, you know, if I hear a voice from the past, it's still Mike, right? Just like...
My grandmother is the only one.
Your grandmother's the only one left calling you Michael?
Well, she's gone now, but she was the only one. When I heard Michael, I knew. If somebody calls me Michael, I think they want to arrest me or want money. You know? No, I don't respond to Michael.
Talking again with Mickey Hart, and new album out. The Mickey Hart Band has a new album out. It's called Mysterium Tremendum, and you can actually go see them June 30th. They'll be appearing at the Fillmore. We're going to actually... well, let's go into the break and hear a little bit from Mysterium Tremendum. This is the last 90 seconds of Heartbeat of the Sun. What you're listening to now, again, from Mysterium Tremendum is Slow Joe Rain. And you're also hearing Mickey Hart, that is, playing the drums to go with this cut that we're hearing, this track from Mysterium Tremendum. Now, we should have got a photo of Mickey there. He was all lit up. Why, that music does that to you, doesn't it?
I like to play, man. I love to play, man.
I haven't seen anybody that excited about his own music since Mickey, since Sammy Hagar was
well,
in
I don't know, Sammy, my brother Sammy. Well, I haven't heard that music for a while. I haven't heard the record, you know, since I made it. I don't listen. I don't go home and listen to the record, Michael. So it sounds great.
It does sound really good. In fact, well, we're going to hear some more music before that, but let's go to get our callers involved in this. And Mike. Not Michael, not Mickey, but Mike is our first caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've been thinking about this for a long time. Music makes me feel really wonderful, and I kind of feel like all's right with the universe. And I kind of resent it because I know that it's not true. It's sort of like a drug. I wonder why that is.
Well, I don't know how to really respond to that. You're comparing apples and oranges, and it could be a drug in some respects, but not all drugs are bad. Some drugs are good. You need sometimes assistance, like for pain and so forth. But yeah, it tunes you into who you really are, and you know you're part of the universe, and music kind of. So it translates that experience.
Yeah, there's maybe a more profound thought in that, though, that there's the darkness out there as well. And
yeah.
Music can lift you up and elevate your spirits. And
it could bring you down, too.
Of course it can.
You know, there is music meant for war, martial music and so forth.
You know, Woody Allen said he heard Wagner, he wanted to go conquer Europe. But there's also, what was it? I'm trying to remember. It was a film, it was a German film that took place in Hungary, and it was based on a real story where people were committing suicide because of a certain symphony that they heard that was just so
well. This is
depressing.
This is a great topic because remember the Branch Davidians in Waco?
Sure.
One day I looked at the TV, and the Branch Davidians, the FBI was feeding them the Giotto Tantra Choir on big speakers. You know, my recording.
Trying to get them crazy with it.
They were using sacred music from Tibet as a weapon.
Yes.
So I called up the FBI. I told them, I'm going to sue you. You get that music off of that. And they did. And about 8 hours later, they were playing Van Halen to them or something.
You know, we got a cut, actually. You got a bunch of cuts from The Grateful Dead. One of them is Friend of the Devil, and I always wondered about that title because you go back to Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones, Sympathy for the Devil.
Yeah.
We're just talking about darkness and everything. What were you guys trying to communicate?
I won't comment on that because I never really try to analyze Hunter's words. It's just
not
something I do. It means something for each person, different. It's a different translation. I like to keep lyrical content like that and not be too specific about what it really means. You tell me.
Fair enough. We'll go to more calls. And Khalid, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I would like to just thank Mickey for all that he's doing and all that he's contributing to the music world. Yes, and I think that you're a very articulate person. I love your music. Since I come across your documentary, it helps me more as a musician to tune in to the vibrations. I really think that music is a form that we still understanding is infinite. We're not going to understand it. We only can feel it and enjoy it. And again, I just want to compliment you and thank you for bringing that knowledge and that insight, inspiration to existence.
Thank you so much.
Thank
I appreciate
you for the call.
That. Appreciate it.
Getting a lot of that here, listener writes, being a longtime Deadhead, I wanted to thank Mickey for the inspiration and joy he has brought to my life. And this same listener says, can Mickey say more about his collaboration with Zakir Hussain and the commonality and differences with Eastern music?
Well, yes, of course. Zakir is probably the most developed human on the planet, rhythmically speaking. Comes from a long tradition of drummers. His father, Ala Raka, was my teacher back in 1967, who kind of introduced me to all the intricacies of the groove, and I brought that back to the Grateful Dead, and we changed from a blues band into the Grateful Dead. Very, very influential, his father. His father, soft, older gentleman, he said, my son, he could play with you, and you will enjoy him. So he brought Zakir to Nevada, to California when he was a kid, 17, I think, and we lived together, and that's where our relationship started, and I kind of, He says that I got him funky, you know, taught him to relax and to breathe as opposed to playing so perfectly, and which was a kind of, I wonder what I could have taught Sakir. But it seems like you can teach a lot by just being from a different culturally, specifically. But we had passion and we loved each other. And so we created some, you know, historic works percussively over the years.
Well, you're talking about fathers and sons. I want to broach a topic that probably is sensitive. There was a big story about your father and the Grateful Dead. And
right. Well, he was a con man.
Yeah, he was taking money.
He was
money.
A thief, yeah. So, you know, as opposed to the greatest drummer in the world.
Do you have a relationship now with him at all?
No, he's gone. He's gone.
Oh, he's passed away.
Oh, yeah.
Was there any reconciliation?
No. Never saw him again. Yeah. You know, he just...
Sad story.
He took the money and ran.
Yeah. Troubling and sad. Here's Christopher who says, love to hear Mickey address the specific technologies that enable his sonifications. Are you working with sound files or lists and arrays?
Sound files. And then we crunch them using MATLAB and, you know, we break them down. So they come to us as wave files. And we have scientists at Penn State and Berkeley that change the form from light to sound.
Another listener says, this is Bruce in Oakland. My brother, nephew, and I took part in the world's largest drum circle that you directed at Earth Dance 2004. Has that record been broken since? And adds, it was a joy having you conduct that sea of drummers. What was this thing recently at Santa Clarita, right?
Yes, I did. I broke it with 11,500 kids playing drums. It's being verified now in England by Guinness. And yeah, so we pumped it up. I think the Japanese came in with 10,000 a couple of years ago, and Remo Belli and Remo Drums and myself. And the school district in Valencia in California, where Remo has put a music program using a rhythm-based music program using drums, we got 11,500 kids together. Played for 6 minutes.
It's on YouTube, by the way.
Is it now?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can see it. It's quite an event.
It was quite a feel, you know. I mean, being in the middle of 11,000, you know, drummers. My kind of day, Michael. My kind of day.
Yeah, well, let's hope this is as well. We've got more callers for you. John, hi.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Mick, love your music, love the Dead.
But this is the question.
No, listen. But you know what? I just want to get your opinion, or just want to get your insight into this. It's no secret that, you know, there's a lot of drug use at the concerts.
I never inhaled. Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Are you trying to ruin my reputation? I'm trying to get back into the CIA, and this is not going well.
No. I'm not talking about you, brother. I'm talking about us, those who went, you know, great time. I'm in my late 40s now,
I'm starting
to see what it did to, like, some of the friends in the group and some who passed and stuff. I'm just wondering, you know, and I'm starting to have a family, and I know the electronic music and the ecstasy and all that.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice you can give to the generations about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, and just, again, it was a great time, but I do regret some of the stuff that we did. But anyway, thanks, man.
Yes, moderation. I would say moderation would be... You should consider that in anything you do, and know your sources. That's another thing. If you are going to experiment with psychoactive drugs or whatever, know where you're getting it from, and you know.
Do you have regrets about that at all, Mickey? I mean, about
no regrets. I knew the chemist, and he actually worked for me. You know,
he was in your employ, as they say.
Owsley, yeah. And so I knew exactly what I was doing every time I did it, and there was no guesswork. We were professionals at this, and so it's different with me.
I never bought drugs.
You see, I never bought them on the street or anything. I wouldn't do that. It's too dangerous. Who knows what you're getting?
Well, we get back to music here. Scott says, this past Saturday, I saw Bobby Hutcherson at the Stanford Jazz Festival. The transformation that overcame him when he began playing was remarkable. Sitting with oxygen assistance backstage, I was surprised at how old he seemed. On stage, he was full of energy and performed at a level that few will ever achieve. The power of music was very evident that evening.
Yes.
Another listener says, has everyone from the 60s and 70s hippie scene lapsed into irrelevance? The world economic system is crashing. The Syrians are about to instigate the next world war. The major banks are bankrupt but powerful like never before. But this fellow is making music from starlight. Reminds me of what has happened at Burning Man.
Yeah. Well, you could look at it in those terms, but I deal in vibrations. I know that vibrations work. I know that music, I believe in music. I love music. Music's a healing agent. So anyone who tells me that, you know, I'm trying the best and screaming as hard as I can, do you think I like all that that's going on? Absolutely not. Do you think I can make a difference? Perhaps. And the only way I can make a difference is by doing what I do. Oh, yeah. If I didn't have to play with starlights, maybe I wouldn't. But I also enjoy it. It's part of my life. So I'm doing something, or at least I'm trying to do something. And I would say, well, what are you doing? And I would throw it back to you.
Well, we'll throw it out to another caller who's actually calling us from Forestville. Brad, you want to talk about, you're a doctor, works with hospice and uses music?
Well, yeah, I dance at night up with you guys, but really what I wanted to comment on, I wanted to thank you, Mickey. I live up here close to you, and for a third of a century I've worked with people near the end of life. And I finally get connecting with people who are dying, people who are demented, through entrainment and vibration. It's very much like music and dancing when you communicate with someone who really doesn't have words. And I wondered if you could say a few words about that yourself.
Well, it's four words. It's the rhythm, stupid, you know, and that's what I always say to anybody, and in myself as well. You know, it all goes back to that. You know, it all goes back. We are rhythm machines embedded in a universe of rhythm. Well, it stands to reason that there has to be some resonance between all of that. You just have to know how to communicate. What is the language?
If you have no rhythm?
No, you have. When the rhythm
starts. No, I mean, people ask me why I don't dance, and there's a simple reason why I don't dance. I have no rhythm. I love music, but I have no rhythm.
Sorry, Michael. You have rhythm. Can you comb your hair? Can you brush your teeth?
What hair I have left, yeah. And
what's left? You have rhythm. You just don't know. You haven't been free to be able to just tap on the table, Michael. Can you tap on the table?
I used to do a little bongoing and that sort of thing.
Come on.
Yeah, I can do that.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But there's not rhythm behind it. It's just tapping.
No, that's... You have to be calm, and we'll work on your rhythm later. But
when
the rhythm stops, you're dead. When you come into the world, your rhythm begins. So you are with rhythm. You know, somewhere along the line, someone told you it might not be so cool to tap on the table, perhaps. But you have rhythm.
Or that I couldn't dance.
Or you couldn't dance.
Let me get a caller on. Steve, that's you. Welcome.
Hey, buddy. Hey, Mickey. It's Steve Silberman. Great to hear your voice on the radio. Mm. You have obviously been a world music pioneer for decades, both working with Alaraca and also doing the field recordings of people like Hamza Eldin and collaborating with people like that.
Yes.
I'm wondering what other musicians of your generation influenced you or turned you on to incorporating non-Western elements into your music?
Well, I just had a conversation with David Crosby a few weeks ago. And funny thing is, Phil Esch and I were in David's living room, woke up in sleeping bags, you know, down in the canyon there, wherever he was. And he got up at 6:30 in the morning and he started playing the Whale music to me. You know, that was the first connection I really made between natural sounds and music. That was so beautiful, the humpback whales. And Phil and I were just lying there, and it was just so dreamy and airy. And we didn't know what it was. But so these kind of things make you, you know, these kind of events make you aware that.
Do you know Bernie Krause's work, Mickey?
Pardon me?
Bernie Krause, do you know his
work? Yeah, I know
work?
Bernie.
Yeah.
He did that beautiful book, and he's been collecting.
He was on the show not too long ago.
Yeah, Bernie.
All these animal sounds.
He's a warrior. Yeah, Bernie is a real bona fide remote recordist, and he understands that the world is sound, and you just have to have the ears to hear it and the knowledge to be able to accept it in this and follow with the music and the movement. I love the movement in things, so I look for movement and sound. This is really what really attracts me.
Steve, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And on to another call. By the way, if you want to join us in the time remaining, it's 866-733-6786 for your calls. And you can email us forum@kqed.org or go right to our Facebook page. Sharon from Sebastopol. Hi.
Hello. Yes. Hi. Well, my world is all about movement and sound. Being a dancer for so many years, living in the Sonoma County, you know, I've worked with people like Sylvia Nakash and Gabriel Roth, and been following Stephen Halpern, Paul Horn, you know, all these people, Joseph Goldstein, healing sound conferences in Colorado every year. So my question, when I hear about you working with people in the hospital and so forth, and wanting to, as a seasoned dancer, to plug into the field of music therapy with acquiring a certain professional status so that I could be admitted into institutions of need. What's your advice, and what opportunities might you provide for dancers to connect with programs using rhythm and movement to reach people like the children in the cancer ward, or just some other ideas in addition to what I know is out there, like Globe in San Francisco?
Yeah, well, look on Google it and look at your local boards and find music therapy organization, your local one, and make contact with it and volunteer. And then you will become accredited somehow in whatever field you want to go to. But because your kind of enthusiasm really will go a long way in the cancer wards. And you know, when I saw those kids coming out at University of California, San Francisco with life support systems, and the one hand they could drum with, they were just drumming and drumming, and they were just so, so into it. And when they left, they were taller, and they were different. So
it gives
music,
you a feeling of strength sometimes, just hitting that drum, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. But you don't have to hit it hard. It's not about the sound so much as getting into a rhythm that is a trance rhythm. It's something that entrains, that puts you in sync with yourself and your surroundings, and it lets you forget the pain. And it gives you what Iliada would say, it represents the holy other. It represents something that's not obvious. There's a guy playing the drum, but what is that doing for him psychologically, spiritually? You can't really see it. So there's a whole other meaning to the experience of not just listening to music, but actually participating in it and grooving with it and grooving with the person next to you and communicating on a nonverbal level. And it's, Bob Marley said, music have plenty power. Well, and he was right. Music have plenty power.
It's also the universality of these rhythms you're talking about. I mean, aside from going back to the Big Bang and all that, you know, you've done kind of almost anthropological field work where you've discovered to a great degree that so many cultures every culture.
Every culture.
Really.
There is not one culture on the planet that does not have its music.
Well, let me actually give you some sense of how, again, some of our listeners are responding to this conversation of ours. Stephen writes, I've been a chronic pain patient for many years now. I see a pain specialist in Sausalito who is currently using sound as a treatment. He's developed a library of sound files which incorporate very low frequencies and various patterns, and you can listen to them on your iPod as long as you have high-quality headphones. In addition, he has started to use Tibetan bowls, placing them on the patient's body, then striking them and allowing the sound waves to permeate the body. Mm-hmm. I have found these techniques helpful in alleviating pain and reducing stress. Boy, whatever works. Here's Dale on our Facebook page who writes, greetings and many thanks for hosting this valuable interview, and Mickey also for signing my talking drum in Portland last month. I've been studying bass frequencies for years and am fascinated by 528HZ. I've heard that this is the pulse of Earth's core, our hearts and internal organs, and even Jupiter. Is this consistent with your findings?
Well, I don't know if that particular number is consistent with my findings, but everything does resonate, and you have to find the resonance. You will find the resonance, the tempo, the rate, the amplitude that you are familiar with, that you won't know about it. But all of a sudden, you find yourself playing at a certain rate or a certain whatever, and that's your kind of your common time, the common beat of your body. That's your thumbprint. It's your rhythm print, as it were. So you know, there's low end is very powerful because it moves you physically. It does definitely drives the skeletal part of you. So,
as you said before, your musculature too.
Yeah.
Here's Vicky in San Anselmo says, I saw my first Grateful Dead show in 1982 when I was 16 and kept at it till the end. I see lots of other amazing music as well, of course, but nothing ever reached my core like the Dead. I felt like each song was important, its own event. Listening to Mickey describe music's link to the rhythms of the universe explains the music's draw to me. The visceral connection to larger universal forces is therapeutic, and I have often turned to it in tough times, and it has enabled me to pull out of that state even if temporarily. Yeah. Thanks to you and all those who bring us these interpretations of the universe's vibrations. Mm. They are important. Another listener, fascinating question. Gerda says, aren't there theories that the ancient Egyptians used sonic technology to move the giant stones to build the pyramids?
Oh, I've never really heard of that right. that one, but they did make chambers like temple caves, so where they prayed, for sure.
We've been talking about the Grateful Dead in a couple of these. I just want to hear a little bit of the Grateful Dead as interpreted by the Mickey Hart Band. And Danny, do you have a cut we I think called Bertha? Let's hear some of that. I got to tell you something, Mickey, that you probably wouldn't have been privy to otherwise. My mother's name was Bertha.
Oh, is that right?
She was known as Betty, like you've been uh-huh. known as Mickey, and I've been yeah. known as, well, was known for a while as Mike, like we were talking yeah. about before, but that was her name. Did you guys ever have a major kind of colossal single hit?
Grateful Dead, Grateful Dead hit.
No. I'm talking about just a single now.
No.
The album sold fabulously.
One time we went to number six.
Which one was that?
Touch of Grey.
Oh, Touch of Grey.
Touch of Grey went to six, but one of the highest things we did was in the old days. We hit Truckin' was number 40 in Turlock. You understand?
Well, Truckin's big in Turlock. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't make singles. We never wanted. That wasn't the baby.
Yeah, but a lot of artists had their singles taken off of their CDs or their albums.
Right.
Back in the day, it was very common.
It took longer for us to spin the story. We just couldn't do it in 4 minutes. And even if we took an edit, it just didn't work. You know, a 4-minute Dark Star it was ludicrous. But we played the game a little tiny bit, you know, just so, you know, the record people wouldn't, you know, commit suicide and so forth. But it really wasn't our game. We didn't make videos. You know, we were sort of like a parallel universe to the music business.
Well, you know, I just had a quick memory, what Proust would call involuntary memory. I remember talking to Rock Scully, who was your manager for a number of years. I was talking to him, and it was on the day that John Lennon was killed.
Yeah.
And it was, wow, you know, I mean, his response and the response of people who he was with at the time and so forth. We were talking on the phone, but, you know, it was just the impact of it just came back to me.
Mm-hmm.
Mimi writes, I'd like to hear more about Mickey's work with chronic diseases, specifically Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Has he interested anyone in clinical research? Have you?
Oh, yes. I work at the Institute of Neurologic Function in New York with Oliver Sacks and Connie Tomeno, and it studies, what the brain looks like after we work with these Parkinson's and dementia folks. And there's other scientists here in San Francisco who are about to embark on a serious scientific study of these cases. So it's just about really ready right now to really get serious, because the new imaging machines are what I've been after. Because
you know, those MRIs, and if you got Sacks on board, you're big
way
there.
Oliver and I go back a long way. We testified in front of the Senate in 91 on the power of music for the aging in front of Harry Reid's subcommittee. We got millions of dollars for music therapy. It kind of kick-started it here in the West. So, and Oliver's brilliant. He's just
one of my favorite guests, actually, in terms of people I've had on the air through the years. Mary Beth says, a little story about drumming. I will never forget what a friend told me about his time in the Peace Corps many years ago. He described how he could hear the drums at night as they traveled all the way around Lake Malawi in Africa. This was how the villages communicated with each other. Although I could only imagine what it must have sounded like, it still had a profound impact on my psyche. Keep drumming, Mickey. John in Napa says, longtime Deadhead here. Thanks for all you've done to open up the world of music and rhythm to so many people. How did moving to in-ear monitors change things to you? Do you like this better than stage monitors? Feeling the percussion is so important.
Well, it was quite a change. That's a great question. Was you had to create a virtual world inside, you know, your ears, like you were hearing the space and the hall and everything. Now you had to create some kind of a musical environment in your head, in your crania. So it was very difficult at first, but then what you realize is that all the instruments come out very clear, and you can hear, you know, the tiniest detail, because before, the monitors, the sound of the stage was just overwhelming the vocalist, overwhelming the drums, because we had an arms race, like a volume race. When Jerry got another amplifier, Yorma did, and then Gurley did, and then Cipollina did, and all of a sudden we were, you know, we hit the wall. And so there was no place to go. You couldn't get any louder. So the only thing to do was to now experiment with not ludicrous loud, but just very loud, you know. So it was a boon, I think. And I still use them. And but what I do now is I have a vibrator underneath me on the floor. There's like this, they call it some kind of kicker thing. So I have a vibratory stimuli under my feet for the bass and all my low drums. I get it up through my feet as well. So I just made that, close that whole circuit. So I vibrate when I play now, the whole body. It's not just in my ears.
Well, I wanted to announce before we say goodbye that we have a link to the drum circle in the comments on our webpage, so people can go and access that. And what you're hearing here is Who Stole the Show from the end of song. This is again from the Mickey Hart Band. You can see them at the Fillmore on the 30th. And Mickey, thanks so much for being with us. Always enjoy your company.
It was a pleasure, Michael. Thank you so much.
And thanks to all of you for being with us. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our production staff, Judy Campbell, Tina Larberg, and Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.